Hey cuties, this is Deidre C.
Hey cuties, it's Jay Nicole.
And welcome to the Queen Team Podcast.
A place to cultivate your queendom.
Welcome cuties. We're so happy to have you with us this Wednesday. We're going to do something a little bit different. And not because it's Mental Health Awareness Month, even though it is Mental Health Awareness Month, we're going to be talking a little bit about emotional abuse and how it's not always so easy to cultivate your queendom. And so I would like to introduce my special guest. You know her. You love her. Our own Jay Nicole, who is ready to share about her story. Here on our episode today, she's going to tell us about moving through emotional abuse and how you can create a beautiful life after. Thank you so much for your courage to be vulnerable here in the space with these ladies. You've already showed us that side of yourself in previous episodes. But I know this is something that is an experience that you are just moving through and are ready to share with the public. And so, Jay Nicole, tell us how you are now and how would you describe yourself now on all levels?
All right. Welcome, cuties. Thank you for being here in this space with me. This is a vulnerable space and an emotional space. But my hope is that this will be a place for freedom. Mm-hmm. Because that is my after. Yeah. I'm free. And with freedom comes exploration, comes purpose, and being able to walk in who you are and discover who you are. And that's where I am now. Completely awakened spiritually, mentally, emotionally. And my life gets better and better every day as I discover more of who I am, discover more of how I move through the world, and being able to create the life that I want. And so most days I feel amazing, better than I ever felt even before the emotional abuse happened, because I didn't know who I was then and I didn't know why I was created and why I'm here on this earth. Mm-hmm. So being able to know that now brings a confidence and a sense of calm and completeness that I've never felt before.
Yes.
And I feel like the relationship was a catalyst for me to get to where I am now. Mm-hmm.
So let's just back it up. How, in contrast, would you describe yourself then when you were in the thick of being in an emotionally abusive relationship?
Probably a few best words to describe it are lost, mm-hmm. confused, and suppressed. Mm-hmm. You could also throw in there depressed, mm-hmm. desperate, mm-hmm. lonely, helpless, suicidal, broken.
Yeah.
Broken to mm-hmm. pieces. My heart was broken. My stride was broken. My strength was broken. Mm-hmm. I was just broken.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about the beginning.
Yeah.
Of the relationship with your ex. What is that like? How was it? How did it feel in the beginning to be in a relationship with this person? Because nobody's like, hey, I'm open for emotional abuse. Pick
yeah.
me.
And as you said that, and I wish I could have hired a videographer to record this so that facial expressions and your reactions and my genuine reactions to your questions that you're asking me. But anyhow, I smiled because that part of the relationship was amazing. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't call it a fairy tale, but I felt like it aligned with exactly what I envisioned for myself in a lot of ways, not in every way, but in a lot of ways. But the relationship was with my ex-husband, who we were married for 8 years. But how we met was we used to work together. When I was 18, we were both the same age, we were 18. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I found out through a few people at the job that he had a crush on me. And we kind of talked about it one time. And I asked him, well, why? Why do you like me? And he really couldn't answer the question. And for me, I was kind of put off by that.
Uh-huh.
But then the place where we worked, I continued to work there. And about 7 years later, when I was 25, mm-hmm. or no, I hadn't turned 25 yet, he came in. And he looked like a grown up, like he was just like had come into himself. Mm-hmm. And I saw him and I remembered that he had a crush on me. And I kind of wondered if he still did or, mm-hmm. you know, thought about him occasionally over the years and wondered how he'd been.
Yeah.
And so when I saw him, I put my hand up and I said, hey, you know, like, how have you been? And we exchanged numbers and it was like lightning striking. And we would spend a lot of time together. We had a lot in common. He made me feel excited. What really made me decide that he was the right guy for me was that I felt like I wanted to grow my relationship with God. I wanted to become closer to God.
Yes, yes.
And so looking back at it now, I was looking for God.
Mm.
I was looking for God and I found that in a person.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my mistake.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think you're the only one who makes that mistake.
Yeah, absolutely.
Holy moly. So after you had like these lightning moments and you felt this connection and this desire really to grow a spiritual relationship or make it more deep, what was that like kind of entering into that relationship or starting that relationship or having that connection grow between you before you decided to be married?
It felt amazing. I mean, it felt like this was supposed to be happening. I felt like it was the right timing. I had moved to Texas for a while. And when I came back, I had swore to myself that I'm going to finish school. And the next guy that I'm serious with, we're going to be married. And then I meet this guy and everything seems to line up. But the way that I felt when we were together in the very beginning, I was just happy. I was beaming all the time. Mm-hmm. And we had great chemistry. We had amazing conversation. The sex was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt connected to him in every way.
Yes.
Yes. And the way that we talked, I was excited about our future. It seemed that what he wanted to do for a living and what I wanted to do for a living, it was also in alignment.
Mm-hmm.
So I just felt like everything was coming together and I was going to have, you know, I hate to use the word happy ending or fairy tale because, you know, relationships are not that way. But that's how I felt at the time.
Yes.
That's what I was going to have and mm-hmm. be able to create a great life with someone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That sounds incredible. I can totally feel you on that one.
You know, and ladies, you know, when you meet that guy and it's like you get the butterflies and you're excited to see each other. And you get to see each other all the time and you just can't get enough of one another. And you're in the grocery store kissing and all over one another or wherever you are. And it just feels amazing.
Yeah. So when in the relationship did you first start noticing a shift?
Yeah. Before we got married, he came to me and said that. He came to me and said that he no longer wanted to carry on a sexual relationship because it was against what we believe as Christians. And, you know, at the time I believed that, but it wasn't just the sex that stopped. It was also the affection and the attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt completely closed off from him emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to feel desperate or like something was wrong. Like, okay, it's one thing for us not to have sex.
Right.
But it's another thing for us never to come close to having sex, not kissing anymore, not holding hands, not spending the same time together, not connecting emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
That part of the relationship was gone.
Mm-hmm. This is while you're engaged?
While mm-hmm. we were dating and then became engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt like, okay, well, if we get married, we can go back to normal. We can get back to where we were
mm-hmm.
because now we'll have the open door to be able to express our love to each other in all ways
mm-hmm.
Or in each way or in every way.
Right.
And so that's where it started. But I remember one specific incident. We were hanging out at my house and he got a phone call and suddenly had to leave. Mm-hmm. And I was like, where the hell are you going? And I believe it was in that moment that he created an environment of desperation and of want, where he just quickly got up and left without any warning. Mm-hmm. And I felt that it was really inconsiderate. We were had plans to spend the day together, and then all of a sudden you have to go.
Right.
And it was going, he was going to the movies with some friend. And I'm like, this is not even important. Like, what are you talking? Like, where
There's
are
no
you
emergency,
going? Like,
nobody's dying.
You know, we had plans. Like, I thought we had plans. And so that was the beginning of the shift. And then coming to him with these conversations saying, hey, there's something going on here. We're not connected the way we used to be. You know, I understand we're not going to have sex, and I was fine with that. But there's lots of other ways that we can connect physically and mm-hmm. emotionally mm-hmm. that are not sex. Mm-hmm. And somehow in the conversation, it would get turned around and it would be something that I had done that made him feel like he couldn't connect with me. Mm-hmm. And so then started the cycle of me trying to figure out how I could change so that he would want to yes. give me the same attention that he did in the beginning.
Yeah. So they're changing the rules on you almost.
Yeah. And we'll mm-hmm. go over that later.
Yeah.
What that actually is called.
So in those moments when, you know, he would say, this is what you need to do. This is how it needs to be better. This is why I'm withdrawing my affection. How did you cope as those shifts were happening with his behavior changing? What would you do to either cope or adapt to the situation?
Well, let me first mention that those instructions were never clear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They were never specific things that I could do to change, to get better. It would just be like, I don't feel like I can trust you when I'm around you. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like we're as connected as we were, and I don't know what it would take to do that. Let me think about it and get back to you. Mm-hmm. It was always a get back to you. I'm asking you a specific question
yes.
on what specific action did I do that made you feel disconnected from me, and what mm-hmm. can I do? It was never a clear answer.
Yes.
So I always felt confused. Mm-hmm. And I really felt confused, like I said, when I would come and I would say, okay, we're talking about something that you did. Mm-hmm. That caused me some distress. And what can we do to address this issue? What I've done is something we can address later. But right now, right. we're talking about what you've done mm-hmm. and how we can communicate better or whatever the issue was. And mm-hmm. I don't remember ever specifically. I mean, this was almost 10 years ago.
Of course.
Yeah. When we were courting. But I remember how I felt,
yes.
which was always confused and disillusioned. How did I cope? I didn't.
Yeah,
I didn't even realize what was happening. I coped with, I guess my strategy was just to keep trying to figure him out, keep trying to get to know him, you know, keep trying to spend time to so that I can know. And also because of my faith, I said, well, I'm just going to pray about it and God will reveal to me what to do, how to make this better. But the answer never came. And that trend would continue throughout the marriage.
One definition of emotional abuse is any act, including confinement, isolation, verbal assault, humiliation, intimidation, infantilization, or any other treatment which may diminish the sense of identity, dignity, and self-worth. Emotional abuse is also known as psychological abuse or as chronic verbal aggression by researchers. People who suffer from emotional abuse tend to have very low self-esteem, show personality changes, such as becoming withdrawn, and may even become depressed, anxious, or suicidal. Thank you.
my husband never told me I was stupid. Mm-hmm. He never called me names. He just made me feel like I was. Mm-hmm. And when you do that to someone, you don't have to call them anything because they believe it.
Yeah.
So then they start behaving in a way in which they believe. Mm-hmm. He never had to say I was stupid or lazy or a bad mom or couldn't do anything right. That's how he treated me. Mm-hmm. And so I began to believe it.
Yeah.
And then action followed where I was stunted. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't move forward because that's what I started to believe about myself.
Mm-hmm. So what do you mean action followed? Tell me a little bit more about that.
I started to lose myself in terms of being outgoing. And anyone who knows me would describe me as like a high energy at times, fun, gregarious, lively type of person who loves to be with other people. Mm-hmm. And so I stopped wanting to be with other people and I only wanted to be with him so that I could figure out how to fix this. Mm-hmm. And I felt a sense of loyalty to him and always being around him. It's almost like a drug, like you're hypnotized. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you need your next fix and that's done on purpose. Mm-hmm. That's not a healthy relationship with healthy boundaries.
Yeah.
I know that now. I started to change the way that I dressed based on his suggestions and my own diminished self-worth and self-esteem, and eventually was physically and emotionally isolated from everyone that I knew and loved. Mm-hmm. And I allowed it to happen.
Yeah. So as you're kind of on that downward trajectory, and you were embracing all these negative beliefs about yourself, you had started to separate yourself from friends, family, physically, because you didn't live close to your family any longer either, right?
Right. Eventually, mm-hmm. we moved about an hour away from everyone that I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for those first, I think, month or month and a half, maybe 2 months, I didn't have a car.
Oh, wow. So you really like planted in one
so
spot.
So there was nowhere to go. It was me, my 4-year-old and my 6-month-old
mm-hmm.
in the house all day with no way to get to the grocery store, to go anywhere if we had an emergency, to visit anyone, to go to the park, nothing mm-hmm. in the middle of nowhere.
How or did things change after the marriage began, after that wedding night, after you said I do? What did that look like?
So after we got married, our sexual relationship resumed, but it was few and far between, and he was never satisfied in the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could just be really candid here, okay?
I'm pretty sure we made a
let's
safe
just
space
keep
to be
real. Like, I'm sorry. When I look back on my other partners and what I've done in other relationships,
mm-hmm.
I know what to do in the bedroom, honey. Trust me. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like mm-hmm. everything. And I'm open and willing
mm-hmm.
with the right partner. God, I shouldn't be saying this.
Just toot that on horn. You toot your
I'm
horn.
I'm going to toot.
You're
like,
good.
You're good
I'm
at
what you
woman,
do, right?
And I'm good at what I do mm-hmm. for the right person.
Yeah.
Like, you'll be fine. You'll be satisfied and you'll be very happy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, feeling disillusioned around that, like, okay, I know how to, you know, mm-hmm. get down around here, and like, you're just not satisfied. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so the relationship resumed, and now looking back, the only time he had sex with me is when he was trying to get me pregnant.
Wow.
And then as soon as I was pregnant, it was back to being ignored and pushed to the side.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had some pretty rough pregnancies. And even in the pregnancies, he was abusing me by blaming me if I would get sick. I was throwing up. I had a condition called hyperemesis.
Yeah.
And that's when you continuously throw up all day long and feel nauseous. I had lost, through the entire pregnancy, I had lost a lot of weight.
Mm-hmm.
Even to the point where on my first pregnancy, my doctor at the end, she was like, "Do you have an eating disorder?" And I was like, no. And I was happy to be cute, you know, and lose the weight, but I was miserable. Mm-hmm. It was not healthy. And he would blame me for being so sick. Like, well, you keep eating junk. And I'm like, I'm not eating anything. I can only eat watermelon. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Or he would bring home junk food like hamburger and like not get me anything. Mm-mm. And eat it in front of me. So recently, after feeling compelled to talk about this, I wrote an article that describes 17 tactics abusers use to control you. All of these things happened to me in the relationship. Threats, criticism, future faking, spiritual abuse, gaslighting, the silent treatment, projection, switching, jealousy, isolation, smear campaign, anger/rage, rejection, withholding, sabotage, guilt, financial abuse. Yeah, we probably need time to talk about all of these, but I'll just go over a few for now. Mm-hmm. I'll talk about future faking. What future faking is when the abuser talks about your amazing life that you'll have together. Mm-hmm. And this is done to build allure, to build connection, to let you know that they actually care about the relationship. Mm-hmm. Because they're saying one thing with their words, but doing something else with their actions. So he would always talk about when he gets this amazing job, where we would go on vacation, how great things would be once he got some rest. Like, once I get some rest, babe, I'm gonna take you out on a good date and we're gonna have the best sex and we're gonna connect and this and that. Once I get this job, we're gonna move over here and we're gonna do this. It was always some future faking. And that's how you're hooked in the beginning. Mm-hmm. When they create this story. And I think that's the biggest thing, how you get hooked. Or one of the tactics that you get hooked. You're not hooked to some crazy psychopath, abusive person. You're hooked to the idea and yes. the dream and the story that they sell you mm-hmm. about who they are as a person, their character, their lifestyle, their abilities, their, what's it called? Like when somebody has potential to have a bright future. Can you think of a word?
Yeah. Well, potential is definitely one of them.
I can't think of anything.
I don't understand what you're saying, though.
But they hook you that way.
Yeah.
So that's what I married.
Yeah.
I married the sweet guy who I trusted and adored, who I thought adored me and accepted me for who I was, my flaws, my shortcomings. And I thought that I married the same. Somebody mm-hmm. who I accepted for their flaws and shortcomings, but I loved anyway. And so future faking is what kept me in the cycle of abuse.
Yes.
It kept me there because I'm like, okay, things are getting better. Like, we're not fighting anymore. Things have changed. But things had gotten so bad that I stopped fighting. I stopped bringing up things that would bother me because somehow it always got turned around on me. And that's gaslighting. Gaslighting is twisting reality to invalidate your feelings and thoughts, causing you to doubt your perception, your memory, and your sanity. So in the beginning, when I told that story about how I came to him and said, hey, I feel emotionally disconnected from you. What's going on? You know, mm-hmm. You're not affectionate with me anymore. You don't have the same type of conversation. What's going on?
Right.
Somehow it was my fault.
Yeah.
And so after a while, after years of continuing to come to somebody and say, hey, there's a problem here. Hey, there's a problem here.
Yeah.
Then at the end of the conversation, you end up apologizing. You're going to stop bringing up any issues. Mm-hmm. And so then after that, I'll go to my next tactic, which is the silent treatment. Mm. He was so good at it. And let me tell you a side note. If these people use their power for good instead of evil, the world would be such an amazing place. Mm-hmm. And I really believe, Deidre, that this abuse is really just an abuse of their gift, their God-given gift.
Ooh, like the shadow side almost.
Yeah. And magnified by their own pain and evil things that happened to them growing up mm-hmm. and through their life experiences. Mm-hmm. It's twisted and skewed in a way to where they turn what's supposed to be their gift mm-hmm. into hurting others because mm-hmm. that's the way, the only way they feel that they can have control and love in their life mm-hmm. or whatever their ideas of love. There's so much I can tell you.
It sounds like it's an episode unto itself. I mean, we could really have like a 17-part series.
Yeah, we can really talk about this. But let me get back to it. It's the silent treatment. And so this is a form of punishment. Okay, please know, if you are in a relationship with someone and you are getting the silent treatment, that's abuse.
Yeah.
It's abusive.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, I know that in relationships that I've experienced that maybe we're in disagreement
right.
and we're having a hard time controlling our feelings and emotions. And in the past, it's been, I can't talk about this right now.
Mm-hmm.
I love you, but I can't talk about this right now.
Right.
Let's come back
right.
in 3 hours, 6 hours, or at this time, or over dinner, or let's make a special date to attack this and address this issue together.
Yeah.
But to be just like, let me just stop talking about it. I've also gotten, you'll know when I'm over it.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me? I must be a mind reader. I must be so divine right. that I don't even see my own divinity, that I can get into your brain to know when you have resolved this without even discussing this with me.
Right. And what about me? What about my resolve?
Right.
Am I resolved?
Exactly.
And so this would be a continuous cycle where I would be punished through being ignored. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just a physical, it wasn't him physically ignoring me because he would do that too.
Yeah.
But he was emotionally and mentally ignoring me as well.
Mm-hmm.
One of the worst times he did that when I was pregnant with my son, he would come into the house, kind of give me a nod or say hello, put his stuff down, take a shower, whatever he's going to do, and then go in the living room and wouldn't speak to me for the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. And I was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
It was all the way up until the time where I delivered and I had trouble with my delivery.
Mm-hmm.
And I will attribute that to the abuse and just the mental anguish that I was in, that I ended up having to have a C-section. And I didn't want that. But he ignored me all the way up until the baby was born. And I was deciding whether I was going to even have him there at the delivery.
Mm-hmm.
But because I was so afraid that he would leave me,
mm-hmm.
I decided to invite him there on the day I delivered. Mind you, we hadn't talked for months,
mm-hmm.
not a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And then the day I delivered, he came to the hospital and we had this conversation. And he still didn't even really explain to me why he was so upset.
Yeah.
Because if he did, I would remember.
Of course.
I don't remember. Yeah. I don't remember because it was never, every time he was upset about something, it was never clear.
Right. Nor his fault. Nor any responsibility, it sounds like, needed to be taken.
No.
Yeah.
And responsibility is never taken. It was always someone else's fault, whether it was in our relationship or what was going on with him at work, with his family members. Mm-hmm. It was never mm-hmm. him coming to his own mind and saying, you know what, I was rude or I was wrong or I was whatever
right.
and I need to change because I care about this person. I'm going to apologize.
Mm-hmm.
That never happened ever. So moving on. Oh, this is one I really want to talk about. Part of the personality of my husband, or his mask, I would say, is to create a picture of himself that is favorable to everyone on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another way why the abuse can continue, because if you told someone, they'd never believe you.
Right.
They will never believe you, or they have an excuse of why that happened. Because to everyone else, you are the most gallant, courageous, helpful, knowledgeable, easygoing, fun, funny, practical. I mean, any good description of someone's personality, that's what he tried to portray to others in the outside world.
Mm-hmm.
And so coming back to spiritual abuse, he got himself a position at a church as a armor bearer. And for those who are not in some of the Christian faiths, they don't use armor bearer. So I'll just explain it. It's basically like an assistant to the pastor.
Uh-huh.
But it's not just assisting them physically. It's also spiritual covering that you have to have over the pastor. Mm-hmm. And so him having this position gave him a point of notoriety, of high standing in the community, where he would be looked up to and be able to be valued in the community. And so part of the spiritual abuse was, or biblical abuse, however you want to use it, is getting me to follow along in this narrative. And I'm supposed to come and be the dutiful wife sitting and standing behind my husband in the church. And when we get home, you're going to be abusing me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how that's done is where the spiritual abuse comes in is that you hold biblical principles and laws over my head because mm-hmm. you know that he knew that it was important for me to be in right standing with God.
Right.
To be righteous.
Right.
And so, well, planting in your head, using what you already feel, which is when the Bible talks about if you leave your spouse for the wrong reasons, specifically the infidelity piece has to be there. You can't just get up and leave your spouse
right.
for no reason. You have to right. have just cause.
Right.
And so I could never prove that he was cheating on me, even though I would find condoms and lube and all kinds of like phone numbers and stuff like that. But I could never prove it.
Yeah.
So he used that against me to continue doing whatever he was doing. Mm-hmm. But I was left there feeling like if I leave my husband and I marry someone else, I'll be an adulteress.
Yeah.
And it won't work and God won't bless my new marriage. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so I had to stay there. Because I felt like he would use that against me, or he did use that against me. Mm-hmm. Something else that someone who spiritually abuses you does is take specific scriptures and twist them to get you to believe their side of things. Mm-hmm. So, for example, all right, so let's go to the Bible here. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 5, it says, do not deprive each other of sexual relations unless you both agree to refrain from sexual intimacy for a limited time so that you can give yourselves more completely to prayer. Afterward, you should come together again so that Satan won't be able to tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Verse 6, I say this as a concession, not as a command. So, for some, they might be abused spiritually through verse 5. Those who partner want to control their sexual life and say, you have to have sex with me because that's what the Bible says. And it's wrong if you don't and you're out of God's will. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people will use that to abuse you. My abuse came from verse 6 when it says, I say this as a concession, not as a command. Mm-hmm. So he would use the excuse as Paul was single. He didn't really know what he was talking about. So he tried to discredit the source. Mm-hmm. He wasn't married. He doesn't know what it's like to be in a marriage where I don't feel a connection and why I don't feel sexual towards you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And besides, it wasn't a command. It was just a concession.
Right.
So I'm going to withhold myself from you. Mm. And so I could give more examples, but I think that's a pretty powerful one.
Yeah.
And I believe that this is happening in the church way too much mm-hmm. because there's people who have positions in the church who are doing the abuse.
Yes.
And because they've created this trust in the church and in the community, it's really difficult for the wife to come in and then say, well, no, I'm being abused. Yes. And they're like, how? How are you being abused when this guy is so nice? He does everything for us. He's always here. Mm-hmm. He's always kind to everyone.
Yeah.
There's no way that he's abusing you.
Yeah.
And that's the point. They create on the outside mm-hmm. this beautiful picture, this beautiful life for everyone to see, but they don't live with you. Mm-hmm. I live with you. Mm-hmm. I'm the one who bore your children. I'm the one who you're supposed to submit to, and I'm supposed to submit to you as well. Mm-hmm. But you're supposed to submit to God. Mm-hmm. And you're not doing that.
Yes.
And so that spiritual abuse piece, I really want to drive home because people have used it to justify slavery. Mm-hmm. People have used it to justify so many things, but they twist God's word and they twist God's intention to control you.
Yeah.
And so the next tactic that I want to discuss is jealousy. This is also a form of punishment. Mm-hmm. The abuser punishes you to diminish your self-esteem by treating everyone else better than you. Mm-hmm. So they're on Facebook, liking everyone else's picture, saying hello, having conversations with them, texting people, spending time with people, mm-hmm. just creating connections with other people that you wish you had. Mm-hmm. Even in my case where he would create connections with my daughter,
yes.
give her affection, love, conversation, adoration, compliments, and would not do it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that did two things. It made me feel like crap.
Yeah.
And then it made me be jealous of my daughter,
mm-hmm.
which is, I feel, I can't think of a word, but unforgivable,
yeah.
lower than dirt.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so wrong. It's like wrong
abhorrent.
To the core. What'd you say?
Abhorrent.
Okay, that mm-hmm. one. And so we all, I think, experience some form of jealousy and like, where are you going? You know, you look kind of good today. You smell all good. Who are you mm-hmm. going to see? But that person does a good job of having a consistent character. And then you do your own work where you get a hold of your own insecurities.
Yeah.
But jealousy also creates insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes you more jealous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, why are you spending time? And then one time he came home and told me that he had did his coworker's homework. Like, nigga, what? Like, how are you helping another woman
right.
advance in life and better yeah. herself? But I'm over here with my dreams. You did you. You went to school. You got your degree. And then it was supposed to be my turn.
Yes.
And somehow I just can't get back in school. It's always a problem when I try to register.
Right. Right.
And actually, I had registered for school to go back to school to become a nurse. And we were living far away from the school. And he was like, well, this is just going to be too much of a strain in our family. But if that's what you want to do, you go ahead.
Right.
And so, of course, I immediately
reneged
or unenrolled,
mm-hmm.
whatever. I don't know the right word. But
dropped out.
I immediately dropped my classes.
Yeah.
And I came home and I decided to pursue a degree online because I was like, I can't lose my family. I just can't lose my family.
Yeah.
I can't. He's going to leave me. And so he would tell me that if you don't get it together, and he only told me this a couple times, there's 50 other women waiting who will love me when you can't.
Well, that goes back to, which is those tenets. It is like a threat.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a threat.
Yeah. The last thing I want to share is financial abuse.
Yes.
That I have to share that. Okay.
Yes.
So for me, I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. And then when I had my son, he came to me and said, it's okay. You can stay home. I will get another job. We mm-hmm. will make this work. You know, I want you to do that. And so at first I'm like, oh my God, he's so amazing. I get to stay home and be with my newborn. I get to be with my daughter. I can create this life. And then I have all these business ideas I want to do. And I have time to go back to school. This is great. But eventually he cut me off from all the financial information.
Mm.
And would only give me like maybe $40 here, $100 here. I rarely had gas in my car. Didn't have enough money to go visit my family because, again, we live 50 minutes away.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have enough money to go take my kids to do any of the activities that you need to do when you're a stay-at-home mom.
Right.
You have to have some way to educate and entertain them.
Mm-hmm.
And there was never any money there for that. Also, I never had any money to buy new clothes. Mm-hmm. To buy my children anything that they needed.
Mm-hmm.
And I depended on my mom, really, because and this was never spoken between us, but she knew.
Yeah.
And so she would always buy the kids clothes and toys and things that they would need. And Christmases and birthdays would always be a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I went school shopping for my daughter or went shopping for her period was just this past school year.
Oh, wow. That was your first time with you.
My first time going to the mall to buy something for my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think about like the time that was taken from me and the things that I allowed to happen. Don't get me wrong. I've taken responsibility for my part, and we'll maybe talk about that later.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is something that I allowed to happen and I see it now.
Yes.
But you're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
If you don't have the money, if you don't have the self-worth and the self-esteem, they don't have to hit you. Everyone knows about physical abuse, getting knocked upside your head.
Yeah.
And being fearful for your life. But I was fearful for my life in another way. I was fearful that I would never meet anyone new, never make any friends.
Mm-hmm.
My children would hate me. I started to believe that my children didn't like me.
Mm.
I was fearful for my life in terms of being able to follow my dreams and be able to just make enough money to live.
Yeah.
I was fearful that I would never be hired again because eventually I wanted to, you know, get out of the stay-at-home mom and get back to work once I graduated and actually was doing something that I loved.
Yes.
But I started to become fearful, like, no one will ever hire me. Like, I'm this or I'm that, or, well, I'll just say I'm ugly, I'm fat, I'm stupid. No one will want me around. I'll just mess it up, just like I've messed this up. And that was one last thing. Sabotage.
Yeah.
And this goes towards sabotage. He could not allow me to grow further in life in any way, whether it be with friendships or monetarily with my education. And so my example for this is the abuser can't handle you having any kind of success, growth, or happiness. They may have an emotional outburst or cause an argument right before an important meeting or interview to keep you from moving forward in life.
Mm-hmm.
And things like this would happen all the time. I tried to become involved in a network marketing company, an MLM.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you, I think yes. that's what you call it?
Multi-level marketing.
Yeah. And I found that as a great way for me to still stay home and have some success, but then found that through his diminishing words that he would always use towards me, like, oh, well, I shouldn't do this. No one's going to ever buy from me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one's going to believe in this product or in me enough to be on my team.
Yeah.
And tried as I might, I even went to a retreat where they would try to teach you more about the business and how to be better at it. I still felt deflated and like I couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the point of all of the abuse is to control you, to manipulate you, and to keeping you in whatever bubble they feel needs to. And if you step out of line, you're going to get slapped back by whatever tactics they feel. For me, it was being ignored, being completely left out of everything. That's what kept me in line. To eventually I would stop bringing things up.
So what did it take, or what was your awakening moment? Can you tell us a little bit about what it was? What was that catalyst that said, or that jolt that said, okay, this is not right. There's only so much I can take of this. I am done. This is not healthy. This is not what I had planned for my life. This is not the relationship or the type of relationship that I committed to, that I said vows to. We are not both pulling the same weight. There really isn't any connection here. And even maybe if you did or did not, did you say to yourself, this, I am in an abusive situation?
Yeah. It took me a really long time to get there because the narrative that I played was, there's something wrong with me. I need to change. I just need to keep praying. I just need to keep asking. I need to fast. I need to do this and that. Everything that I could think of, whether he suggested it verbally or through his conversations with me, I did. And so when I found that it wasn't working, I started to kind of wake up and realize, like, he's never satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
He's never satisfied. There has never been anything that I have done that he's come to me and said, yeah, Janisha, that's what I need. Can you do more of that?
Mm-hmm.
And I started to accept that he's never going to be satisfied. But I started to go to a therapist. And I described some of the goings on in our relationship. And she said immediately, you're being abused. And it was like, what? Like, I was shocked to the core. Like, what? No, I'm not. Like, I just need to change. Like, can you just tell me how I can get better? And then when I'm at my best self, then he'll love me.
Yeah.
When I'm at my best, greatest self, he'll see me, he'll recognize who I am, and he'll love it. Because I know I'm so great, right? I'm so amazing. And so after that meeting with the therapist that day, I went home and I Googled emotional abuse and some of the tactics that are used to keep you in control. Mm-hmm. And I looked at probably 12 different websites because the definition and the tactics are different depending upon the person or depending upon the abuser.
Yes.
But I resonated with always more than half, almost all of whatever was listed from people's blogs to actual collegiate websites that describe it, like from psychological websites.
Yes.
And so from there, I said, I'm just going to give it some more time. And then because it was around our anniversary, which was in November. And I remember on the day of our anniversary, we had another anniversary yet again where he didn't acknowledge me. We didn't do anything special. I wasn't celebrated. And that was a big part of the abuse. That was part of the abuse where I wasn't celebrated and I was ignored. And so that night, the night of our anniversary, I just went into, we had a truck at the time in the garage, and I went into the garage in the truck and I just was like sobbing and crying, and I ended up calling the suicide hotline. And there were many days when I planned my suicide, when I planned how I would do it, where I would go, what would happen to my children, but I would always come back to my kids, and I would come back to my mother and like hearing her voice crying over me and being devastated and maybe even feeling suicidal herself. And that's what kept me alive. Like, I can't put that kind of pain on my mom.
Yeah.
I can't do that to her. And I can't put that kind of pain on my children who don't even really know me. They'll just be left with a vapor of who I am, and they deserve to know me.
Yes.
And so that day and several days forward, I said, I never want to feel like this again. I'm not going through another birthday, another Christmas, another holiday, another day in my life where I feel this bad every day.
Yeah.
It's just too much.
Yeah.
The external shift happened when a neighbor who I felt like was an angel, she was an angel to me, sent by God to help me to realize what was going on. And I went to her and I kind of described some of the things that were going on in our relationship. And she said, baby girl, you got to go and pray and talk to God and ask him these hard questions about your relationship, and he'll give you the answer. And those hard questions for me were, was I being cheated on? Because at the time I had no clue I was being abused.
Right.
I had no clue. I just thought something was really wrong, and if I just change, things will get better.
Yes.
So the questions for me were, was I being cheated on? Does he really love me? And like, why am I here? And so I took a couple of hours and I went, and me and God just had a conversation. And I would say that was one of the first real conversations I had with God about my life. And we had had little interactions and conversations before, but never like this. And so God told me everything that he was doing and everyone that he was doing it with. And so then when I got home, I found evidence, physical evidence that supported exactly what God told me, and that was enough for me to leave.
Yeah.
And so that was on a Friday. It was on February 3rd when that happened. Then the next day I had to pretend like nothing was wrong, because he was off on the weekend and he was going to return on Monday. And I said, by the time he comes back on Monday, I'll be gone. Mm. And so that was enough for me to feel released.
Yes. Yes.
And I asked God, can I be released from this marriage? And he said, yes. And I'm going to give you more and better than you can ever imagine. Mm-hmm. And right now, that's what this is. This yeah. is my more and my better and my best than I could have ever imagined. And this is just the tip of the iceberg,
yeah.
the beginning. But I left on February the 3rd. And like I said, I found out on February the 3rd, everything that had been going on. And then I spent that whole next day kind of pretending like everything was okay, just acting normal. Then I went to church on Sunday the 5th. When I was at church, God was like, you need to leave now. When you get home, you need to leave. Mm. And so I told him, I said, hey, you know, my mom's having a Super Bowl party down the hill and I'm going to go to her party and I'll be back later. And he was like, okay. I took not a stitch of clothes with me, not a bag, nothing. It was me and my two children and we were gone and I was never going back.
Wow.
And so
that's a lot of power, Janisha, a lot of courage. It's amazing. Amazing.
That was it. I was done.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was done. I just needed to give myself permission to be done and to leave because mm-hmm. I wasn't staying because I was so in love and like, maybe we'll la-di-da. Like, right. No, I was miserable to the point where I had physical manifestations and I'll try to find the pictures. I probably have erased them all where I would get my lips would swell, maybe triple their size. Mm-hmm. And so I was going to the hospital and they were like, nothing's wrong with you. I forget the medical term. I'll find it and we'll link it in the show notes. And anyone who used to work with me back in the day around 2012, 2013, they'll remember there were a couple times I had to leave work because my face was swelling up so badly.
Wow.
And that was just from the stress and anxiety that physically manifested from the relationship. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But after that, I was done. And then I became tenacious about figuring out what happened mm-hmm. because I still didn't have closure.
Yeah.
It's not like I had a conversation. I confronted him. I never confronted him and I never have. Mm-hmm. I never said anything to him. For what? What you going to do? Lie like you always have?
Right.
Twist the story like you always have?
Right.
I said, I have enough and I'm out of here. Because right. I found, like I said, I found physical evidence.
Yes.
Like.
It was enough for you to validate for
no,
yourself.
No, it wasn't enough for anybody. If anybody would have found, and I'm not going to reveal that, if anybody would have found what I found, mm-hmm. they would have been out.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't safe for me to be there when I found what I found. Mm-hmm. It wasn't safe mm-hmm. for me or my children. And so I took several months of research
yes.
to figure out what happened to me. How did I get here? And what happened to him? How did he get here? And figure out the types of abuse. And that's how I was able to write this article mm-hmm. about this, the types of abuse, because I experienced them. And then I've done my research to know
yes.
what these experiences are. Now I've come full circle, like I said in the beginning, where this incident required me to figure out who I was. Mm-hmm. It was a catalyst for me to know why I'm here, why I was created. Mm-hmm. I'm here and I was created to help other people heal.
Yeah.
I know what it looks like when somebody's being abused. Mm-hmm. I know the silence. I know the pain. I know the lie that you tell yourself every day that it's going to get better. And I know why they do what they do. Mm-hmm. And so for right now, I'm manifesting my healing abilities in creating a space for other women who have been abused mm-hmm. to create what I have now, which is a beautiful life after.
Yeah. And so how did you move towards that beautiful life after? What are some of the practical steps you started taking? You said you did some research, but how did you start implementing those, the research that you did, the articles that you read? How did you, number one, start to let go of those negative beliefs and set yeah. those aside? What did you do to cope and like continue to take care of yourself through that process?
Yeah.
And we always know that this process is going to be ongoing. As we grow, we yeah. change, we learn. We're always evolving. But coming from such an unhealthy space, yeah. moving towards a healthy mindset, what were some of the practical things
That's
that you encountered?
Question. Well, first of all, I believe that it was like, bam, I woke up.
Yeah.
And so now that I was awake, it was easy for me in a way to start to rebuild my foundation. But more of the foundation had to be let go of these limiting beliefs, like I was unworthy, I wasn't good enough.
Right.
But I wasn't holding on to them with dear life like I was before.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, we got to replace this with something else. So some of the practical things that I did was I went and bought all new clothes. I got all new clothes. I was like, I used to be snatched back in the day.
Hey.
And something else that I stopped doing in the relationship was listening to my music.
Yeah.
Anybody that knows me knows I'm the DJ. I'm the queen of slow jams. I'm the queen of R&B.
I can personally attest.
Yeah. Like I'm always in here with my playlist every day. I have my playlist or whatever I'm feeling in the moment. And I had stopped listening to my music. So I started listening to my music again. I decorated my room and I went to back to live at home with my mom because I needed a safe place to fall.
Yes.
And my children needed a safe place. And not only that, I was financially destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
My credit was in the tank. And so I had to physically rebuild my credit, start a savings account. I had to finish school. So I have since finished school. I graduated.
Yeah. Hey.
But just doing things, I would pay attention to my feelings. How do I feel today? Am I angry? Am I sad? Am I hurt? And why?
Mm-hmm.
So I start to ask myself why all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said this before, but I ask myself, why am I friends with this person?
Mm-hmm.
How do I feel when I'm with this person?
Right.
Why did I want to work at this particular job, whatever my aspirations, like why did I want to be a nurse? Because that's what I wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
Why do I like to watch the TV shows that I like to watch?
Yes.
Why do I like to hang out? I mean, anything that I did, I analyzed it with a fine tooth comb.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to separate what was, okay, think of your life as a room that you share with your brother or sister. You know, you growing up together, you guys got to share a room. Your mom tells you to go clean your room. Well, y'all get in an argument because you're like, that's not my toy.
Right.
That's
I didn't put that there.
Whatever. Mm. So I went and I started to clean my room. This was my mess. This was his mess.
Yes.
And other people in my life that have left a mess in my room.
Mm-hmm.
And I had started to separate it in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And so that for me helped me to break free and it helped me to really figure out and know who I was and what I really wanted and what really mattered to me. And also something that helped me wake up is I had the realization of now everything that I held dear to me was gone, right? So I realized that I put my identity in this position,
yes,
which was a wife, a armor bearer's wife, which is a prominent member in the church community, a stay-at-home mom. I even put some of my identity in that.
Yeah.
And I realized if my kids die today, I already lost my marriage. But if my kids die today and it was just me, Janisha, Nicole Howard, sitting here by myself.
Yeah.
Who would I be and why would I be on this earth?
Mm-hmm.
And once I stripped all that away, it became easier for me to see who I was. Because, yes, I am a mom. I was a wife. But that's not who I am.
Yes.
And that's not why I'm here.
Right.
That's just a manifestation of my choices.
Yes.
And so if that's how you're feeling, that's not who you are.
Mm-hmm.
That's not who you are at all.
Oh my gosh.
At all.
So beautiful. I love it.
So a lot of things started happening and it's been very quick because it's only been about 15 months since February 5th, the day that I left.
Yes.
And so I've been able to move, or maybe 16, I've been able to move forward because the chain was broken.
Yes.
And I immediately removed myself from the abuser.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get healed if you're in the same place where you got sick.
That's right.
And so I'm not encouraging anyone to leave their husband, but I will tell you, you cannot heal if you are continuing to be abused.
Mm-hmm.
It can't happen.
Yeah. Oh, so much. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Your last comment really made me think of another question. So now that you're not in a relationship with this person anymore and you've established these strong boundaries, but you still have children that you have to share. So there's still some and certain interactions that you have to have.
Mm-hmm.
How does that manifest itself? Is there any abuse still happening? Are you able to, what have you put in place to potentially prevent this?
Yeah. So you use the word boundaries and that's something I totally forgot about. And that was one of a really breakthrough video that I did on my YouTube channel, a two-part series on boundaries. I'm not here to promote that. I'm just here to say that that was something that I did, I worked through, and I decided to share it because I knew it would be life-changing for other people. But boundaries. I decided to forgive him because who I am is a lover. I love everybody. Obviously, to a fault. I loved him so much that I gave myself away completely.
Yeah.
And that was my mistake. Mm-hmm. My mistake was that I was looking for God and he was looking to be God.
Mm.
And so we were a perfect match.
Yeah.
And so once I stopped looking for God, once I stopped looking for God in people and just started looking for God through God and within myself, mm-hmm. then I was able to break free. But now he still abuses me, of course. Mm-hmm. That's not going to stop until he gets healed.
Yeah.
But it doesn't affect me in the same way because I have boundaries.
Yes.
How does he abuse me? By talking bad about me to my kids, by utterly refusing to have conversation with me about our relationship, about our children. And he'll humor me a little bit, but I mean, to sit down and have a true conversation, okay, this is what we need to do for our children. This is how we should move forward. This is where they should go to school. We don't have those conversations. Any conversation that we do have about the children, it's brought up by me.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while, he would completely ignore me when we would exchange the children, not look at me. And for a while, I did it to him. But I did it to establish a boundary. I did it to let you know you cannot have eye contact with me. You cannot look at me. Your energy and your spirit cannot come anywhere near my spirit until you realize who I am.
Right.
And when I felt that released, then I started speaking to him again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if that's what I need to do again to let you know, and it's not about him, it's about the negative spirit and the energies that are connected that he's allowed in his life.
Yeah.
And I know that I am above those negative energies and spirits.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm higher than that. Yeah. So I'm not dismissing him. I'm dismissing those spirits. You have to go. You cannot be around me at all.
Yeah.
And so that's how I take command over the situation now, is that I've set boundaries and I know who I am and I know my power and the authority that I have as a human being.
Yes.
And as a believer. I sent him a text message a few months ago. When I decided to forgive him, I said, "Hi, I hope that you're healing and finding peace." And I said, "I want you to know that I love you and that I believe that there'll be peace between us one day."
Mm-hmm.
And it released.
Yeah.
I didn't send that to get a response from him or to upset him or to confuse him because I didn't say I'm in love with you.
Yes.
Get what I'm saying. As a person, I care about what happens to you because... And if there's any single moms out there who hate their ex, try to forgive them because you have my children.
Yeah.
And I don't want anyone around my children who's not whole, healed, and healthy.
That's right.
And I want that for him so badly.
Mm-hmm.
He's suffering.
Yeah.
And maybe we can talk about his sufferings and maybe how I believe that through the research that I've done in my observation, how he became to be an abuser.
Mm-hmm.
But I want him to be healed, whole, and healthy for himself, but also because he has my kids.
Right, right.
So what do I look like continuing to argue with him and fight with him and have drama with him? That doesn't help anybody.
Not one person, especially not them.
It doesn't help my kids. It doesn't help me. No, forget my kids. Forget him. It doesn't help me.
Yeah.
It makes me feel bad inside. So I had to have that conversation with myself. What will make me feel the best? Feel the best is to admit the truth. I love you.
Mm-hmm.
I love you. And if he came to me today on his deathbed, I would go and see him. I'm not angry with him in the same way that I was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the memories and the residual effects of the abuse are still there. It's like if somebody abuses a dog and then the dog gets adopted by another owner.
Yeah.
And then the owner goes to grab him real quick. That dog's going to flinch.
Yeah. They're skittish. Mm-hmm.
They're skittish. And so I still feel skittish in some ways of the residual effects of what happened, but I'm not angry with him in the same way. So if he really, truly needed me from a genuine place, and I could tell whether you're bullshitting me or you're not, because I know you to the core, and I know myself. I can see it from 10 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
There's no more bullshit that can go on, and that's probably why he doesn't talk to me, because he knows he can't get nowhere.
Yeah.
You're not getting anywhere. I'm going to look at you, and we're going to be done with this conversation.
Yeah.
I have just decided to love him. Mm-hmm. And to wait. When you're ready, then we can have a relationship when you're ready to be healed. Until then, I'm going to keep being me, which is somebody who loves people, somebody who's here to heal. And that's it.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Janisha, for sharing, and feel like this is a safe enough space to share with our listeners.
Yeah.
Ladies, cuties, you know where you can find us. Please, we would love to hear your own stories about where you are, things that have been a struggle for you. If any of this seemed to resonate with you, and if you need anything, please feel free to reach out to us. You can reach us via email at thequeenteampodcast@gmail.com. You can reach us and to connect with us through Instagram at thequeenteampodcast. And also, if you need to get on our website, we're at thequeenteampodcast.com. And Janicole, Janisha, I'd love for you to share with us all of the spaces where we can connect with you.
I want to invite any woman who resonates with this to send me an email at lovetobeyou@gmail.com. The love is spelled L-U-V and then T-O-B-E-Y-O-U, because I want to have a conversation with you if you're ready to move forward with healing and learning how to take control over your situation. I also have created a secret support group on Facebook. It's not open to the public. It's only by invite, because I want this to be a safe and private space for women to heal. So you can send me an email about that as well. You can also follow me on Instagram at lovetobeyou. And I also have a YouTube channel called lovetobeyou as well. Thank you all for listening and for letting me be vulnerable. And I'll see you next week. Bye, cuties.
See you next week, cuties.